November 25, 1996. We are continuing our interview with Rabbi Walter Jacob. This is tape number 7. And we're going to continue to talk about the congregation. We left off last time discussing the music at Congregation Road of Chilchol, the change in the format, the involvement of the congregation, but that's all on tape 6. Now, Dr. Jacob, what we didn't talk about much, and which maybe we should, are the roles of the administrative people at the temple, primarily Victor Cavalier, but his predecessor, Chester Berman. Do you have anything to, what's his name?
Bannman. B-A-N-D.
Okay. Do you have anything to tell us about him?
Sure. Chester Bannman was the administrator when I came. He had been here since 1927 or 28, a long time ago, and came first as the administrator and religious school director from a position as a school administrator in the South, and that position had become untenable or difficult because of Klan activities in whatever community he was. Birmingham? Not sure. Anyhow, the same community as Chief Justice Stone, Harlan Stone, I think so, whom he knew fairly well personally. He then became the administrator, Southern type gentleman, very courteous in every way, and his wife as well, Lottie. By the time I came here as assistant, he was beginning to prepare for retirement, and Victor Cavalier was his successor. And he was already on board as an assistant. Chester really mainly dealt with the administration period. That was it. And these were not always easy times, because he was here while the Levy Hall and the religious school wing was built, and subsequently while the Freehouse Hall and the rest of this package of buildings was put up. So that meant a time of a lot of turmoil and change.
Time period?
Time period, he retired in question. My guess is it was in the early 60s.
And the building?
One building was done in the late 30s. And the other building was done from 55 to 57. 55 to 56.
And no additional buildings after that?
After that, we've only made internal changes and also finally put a new entrance on to the back, because at the time that the second building was built, we finally were able to acquire enough land for a parking lot, or slightly thereafter. So what was intended merely as an entrance to a driveway became the main entrance for everybody. It took some years to sort that out. It took some decades to sort that out and to really create an appropriate entrance. Nothing built after that. The only changes on the grounds were the botanical garden. Yeah, that's much later. Now, Victor Cavalier, who came to the temple as the first as a religious school teacher, and a very good one, then entered this position, always a great admirer of Dr. Freehall, and an exceptionally right and able man, probably in his generation, and probably in the generation before and after, the brightest temple administrator in the country. A man who had lots of ideas for programming, and so did a fair amount of programming on his own. Nobody asked him to put that burden on him. So in the years that he was here, one of the among the things that he created was in the summertime, a sort of an open high school, you might say, which then developed into a real summer program. He did a lot of musical programming for the congregation for many, many years. So we had this fine chamber music series, the Immerman concerts. In the summertime, he was very interested in movies and film. He knew a tremendous amount about the history of film. So we had film festivals for well over 20 years in the summer. And was always open to things that came along. So if you discovered in the middle of the year that there was a program that would be nice, or he discovered it, he'd book it, find the funds for it. And so we got all sorts of things, dance groups, speakers, other groups. And he was also, both of us for that matter, saw it as part of our duty to step in when the Jewish community was acting too slowly. So in the whole civil rights era, when the Jewish Federation really dragged its feet, not knowing exactly which way to go, we simply insisted that meetings, programs, speakers for the community hosted by us here at the temple, being much more flexible and also much more willing to take a chance. And with the history of the complete freedom of the pulpit here, nobody people could disagree with the speaker, but they couldn't disagree with permitting him to speak at temple.
When you say freedom of pulpit here,
well, it doesn't exist entirely everywhere, either officially, that people will say in some places, if you invite some radical, you really have to ask us first, or that it is an unspoken inhibition, you might say. If there's a congregation which is dependent on its finances, the big industrialist, then it's unlikely that you're going to have a radical labor organizer as a speaker. But because this congregation has really not ever depended on any single person for major finances, you didn't have to fear that. And long ago, clearly established that the rabbi would determine who would speak from the board. Other program, well, we extended that. And of course, the other free arm of this congregation always was a junior congregation. You could schedule, if you could persuade them to do something, they were free to do anything they wanted.
You did mention that.
So that was useful. Now, Victor also was extremely active in the general community. So he headed half a dozen agencies as president of the Family Service, the American Jewish Committee, and lots of other things too, and was national president of his fraternity, and took a great interest in cultural affairs both here and outside the city, particularly in dance. Knew a great deal about it and helped to establish dance as an artistic medium in Pittsburgh.
What was his training? They didn't have programs in temple administration.
Well, very few people are directly trained in that way. He had a background in economics. He also taught for many years as an adjunct, I'd say, professor at Pitt and at CMU. Had lots of friends in the academic community. Was very bright, and you didn't have to explain something to him more than once. And he would understand it and have insights into it. I ought to back up a moment and talk about Chester Bannon's wife, Lottie Bannon, a very nice southern lady who did a book with Lillian Freehawk. Lillian did two books in the area of, well, one in synagogue embroidery, or embroidery for the home of the synagogue, and the other in flower arranging. And Lottie Bannon did the one on flower arranging for Jewish occasions with Victor's wife, Mina, of course, very active in many Jewish organizations, and also a teacher in the public schools, taught here at religious school for many, many years.
And how about Victor's successor?
Victor's successor, we've had two people. Names. There was a young woman who succeeded him, and I will think of her name in just a moment.
And okay.
She
came from Connecticut.
Didn't quite work out, and that was unfortunate. Then Jeff Herzog, who also came from within the congregation, taught in our religious school, and is very able as a, you might say, an online administrator who takes care of all of the duties and all of the things connected with the finances of the congregation, the meetings of the congregation, the building itself, in an exceptionally able way. Susan Trivers, who was before him, came in a difficult time because we were just restoring the building. And so there was a fair amount of chaos. We had also, in those years, actually a little earlier, gone to a board and a presidency that rotated. So this was not as simple. The relationships were not quite as simple as they had been before.
Did she try to intervene with the
No. No. She tried, and I encouraged her to do that. An early Saturday morning service completely lay-led, because that was a good idea. And she was a very bright individual, very bright, able individual. But it just didn't work out, so we moved in a different direction. Beyond that, if we're talking purely administrative, I ought to mention briefly at least, the three secretaries with whom I've worked. I'm omitting the secretary who was here for the 6 months in 1955. But after that, I worked with Louise Markovsky, who was very able, very devoted, loyal, saw all the transition from assistant to associate to senior rabbi, and did this all very well. And she was with me for 25 years, a long time. She was followed by Fran Stein, an able Orthodox woman who was an excellent typist and got lot of work on it very quickly. Not quite as good with people. And, but that was okay as far as I was concerned, because she did things very, very well. And she was followed by Barbara Bailey, who has now been here for 8 years, 8, 9 years, quite a while, who is a Presbyterian, and who had to learn not only the ins and outs of Judaism and of the congregation, but also of responsa. And then in those years, my work vastly expanded, and so she had to sort of balance all these things that are going on more or less at the same time. And she's done it extremely well. She's very good, not only with the technical parts of things, you know, computers, all that which she had to learn, but also very personable on the telephone.
And very efficient.
Yes. Yes, and very, all of them have been very helpful, very dedicated and faithful. It's been good to work with.
Well, that's a sign of progress. Let me get back to programming. You said the Victor Cavalier did so much programming. How does the programming work here? I mean, who arranges the Hamilton concerts, the whatever goes on? Because so much goes on.
Yes, well, what evolved is as follows, that it has been my emphasis to expand program and to always move in that direction and to use whatever talents were available to do that. So when Rabbi Pomerantz was here, and he was exceptionally good at programming for teenagers and for college youth, we went all out in that direction. Did all kinds of things which we were not able to do as well before or afterwards. He was also creative with modern music, multimedia, and that sort of thing, which takes an awful lot of time and energy. You know, if you put together a program, let's say a 45-minute program, which requires 10 by 10 foot screens on the pulpit and the projectors and all the coordination, that takes some special skills. So he did that. With Victor, this more or less evolved naturally. He had a lot of contacts, so he did the Sunday morning breakfast and then the musical programs, because he was interested, but we actually talked a lot about the musical programs together because we both had an interest in serious music. On programs that simply showed up or that we heard about somewhere else, either one of us would, you know, come and say, look, here's something that's going to cost us $500. Can you find $500? And his answer would always be yes. We would find it somewhere where it had not been used and simply have an additional program. The summer programs soon evolved in the following way. The Emmerman concerts were and continue to be worked out entirely by the family, the Soderlund family. They pick the people, yes, and really do everything virtually connected with them. The other concerts were largely, for many years, entirely Victor's doing. And only lately have become a committee of responsibility. The summer program then worked out as follows, that he did the movie series, and I did the educational, whatever classes, lectures, and so on, they were. And so what I've tried to do over the years is again, seize the opportunities that exist and find out where things should be done citywide that have not been done, just go ahead and do them. So for example, when that 9-hour film on the Holocaust was Shoah became available, we simply decided, all right, let's go ahead and show it. Nobody else seems to be doing anything, so let's do it for the general community. So it was very—it was fun to work with him and easy to work with him.
Okay, in relation as a follow-up.
Now, let me say this, that in addition to that, this has always been a sort of a balancing act, because you've got the congregation, you've got the sisterhood and the brotherhood. And the sisterhood has almost always programmed, and the junior congregation, programmed independently, done it very well, with a few items that we sort of tie everything together. The brotherhood and the junior congregation have been more dependent on suggestions. So it's been a matter of trying to work with them, not on the social end, I've always found that easy, but on the more intellectual end, the social conscience end, those kinds of things. So it was always a matter then of tying these things together. Although there was always an adult education committee on the part of the senior congregation, they rarely were a committee which produced any ideas. So it was more a matter of coming to them and saying, look, these are the things that I think would be nice to do. Say okay, and then I can move ahead.
As a follow-up to that, I want to talk about the use of the building by other you end up with QED all the time. The music ensemble rush. I know there are probably daily meetings of AA probably other can you tell
us? Sure. When I came, the decision of the board had been that the use would be very limited, actually to activities of the congregation, or to activities which the congregation sponsored for the general community. And slowly, it was possible to open it up, so that, not entirely, I mean, we make sure that first of all, the outside activities do not interfere with our own activities. And secondly, we have never used the building as a way of funding the congregation. If we make some charge, it's a charge intended to help us clean up and do these sorts of things. So that means that we have a different approach than some other organizations. Limit the use to those activities which we feel further the general aims of the congregation, even if we're not, you know, part of them. There's been a certain amount of additional freedom, which I guess I've used fairly extensively, and that is that if I'm heavily involved in an organization, then I can invite them to use the facility. They have to ask a committee, but they will almost always say yes. So I've done that a lot with lots of organizations. So we've had lots of interracial groups, found a home here. But, many things which, you know, have almost gone on forever. There was a religious group which decided after the steel mills closed in the late 80s to meet with the industrial leaders to see whether we could be of some help and work out a format which would be helpful. And we met three times a year, here for a half a day, for several years. You know, that's really a group that pay anything, use the building, but it's certainly part of the general program of set of ideals of the congregation. So we just volunteered the building and did it. there are many groups like that, and that's really the appropriate use of a major building.
Very important.
Many support groups meet here, yes. Well, AA meets here. We've got an overeaters group that meets here. We've got a support group for people who are widows, widowers. We've got a variety of things. Over the years, we've had almost everything under the sun.
Didn't you have a counterpart of a Hebrew school for Oriental children to retain their language?
Almost a decade, we had a Japanese school
right.
that met here on Sunday afternoon. This was so that those kids who were going to return to Japan after a year or two here would be up to par as far as their Japanese education goes. Because, you know, if you fall behind there, you're finished. We had a Mennonite church that met here for 2 years, all the time. We were hospitable when the Tree of Life was building its building on Shady and our forge. They used our facilities for a year and a half or 2 years, maybe all. So we've tried to be hospitable to loads and loads of groups.
You mentioned earlier.
Rarely.
You did go Gordon?
For the first 10 years, I followed his practice, and hardly ever went. And you know, there's something good to be said about that, because both of us felt that the fiscal administration was really a matter for the board, but that education and spiritual matters were within the, and that's what the Constitution also says, in the realm of the rabbi. So why should the rabbi listen to a lot of tedious budget information? And I found it necessary or desirable after a while to go for two reasons. One is, the main reason is that the board was changing. You have a rotating board, that means that there is soon very little memory of history, precedent, and secondly, a lot of people who also don't know how the temple functions, and we are different than some other charitable organization. So you've got to be there to either speak up at the meeting itself, or after the meeting, talk to somebody and tell them what you said is okay, but we function differently. You have to keep these kinds of things in mind. But what I did for many years, and then after a while I decided, what's the difference? I'll just not forget it soon anyway, is leave when people's dues are mentioned. Because I don't want the fact. It really shouldn't matter to me whether somebody is in arrears or not. You know, I treat them exactly the same as far as anything personal or hospital visits or the like is concerned. But I wanted to make sure that that didn't influence.
We did speak at length about choosing rabbis. You did mention that the rabbi
Well, all of the rabbis, that the process is really very simple. When you're looking for somebody, you go to the placement service, and it's organized nationally so that they're to eliminate chaos, they will post the position. And anybody who is already in the rabbinate will may apply, but largely for an assistantship, people who are just graduates. So then you go to Cincinnati and New York, and on a set date, when you told them you were coming, an interview. And before that, you usually get a list of people who are interested, and so you try to do your homework and talk to people who know them. And so by the time you interview them, you have some idea of what the person's going to be like. In the early years, I simply selected somebody, brought them in, and introduced them as, you know, this is your new assistant rabbi. You know, they would meet with the president and perhaps with one or another of the officers. In the later years, there was a certain element of choice, so that I would invite a couple of people, and that led to Rabbi Staitman coming here. I was looking for somebody, an assistant